You're listening to Humanitarian Radio with your hosts, Tony St. Tone and Janie Beauclair.
Good afternoon and welcome to this edition of Humanitarian Radio. I'm Janie Beauclair.
And I'm Tony St. Tone.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. So listen, I want to jump right in with the appreciation of Miss Joan Rivers, who we lost this week. Such a bummer. Last week we did a special on
Robin Williams
passing, or maybe it was the week before. But so I decided to look up Joan Rivers' positive jokes. And she did quite a few of them, which I was really surprised at because, you know, no one positive joke of hers sticks out. They're usually pretty dirty. And
offensive.
Tony, you had looked up a charity that she did a lot of work with.
Well, yeah, what she did is she won The Apprentice, as some of you guys might know. And what she did is she donated her money to God's Love We Deliver, which provides prepared meals for those that are afflicted with AIDS and HIV.
And that was like $100,000 she donated in.
Yeah, I believe it was $150,000 that she donated to them, which I think is a great cause. And we were watching this special on her 2020 where she was actually delivering it, the meals. And she was saying how she takes her grandson, she had taken her grandson for the past 4 or 5 years, every Thanksgiving day, and went around and gave meals out,
yeah,
which I thought was awesome.
Yep. And the lady who runs the organization made a particular comment and said she's not just doing this as a celebrity to, you know, gain more commentary on the news. She's doing this out of deep heart love, heartfelt love, totally committed in her heart, nothing to do with the celebrity. That's just a vehicle for her to be able to fund some money into there.
Mm-hmm.
They also said, the organization said that her $150,000 donation saved their organization.
Yeah.
They were in a terrible spot, and that brought them back around again. And
yeah,
so what a beautiful thing. So getting to some of these funny, inspirational things, this one I like particularly, she says, "Yesterday is history. Tomorrow is a mystery. Today is God's gift. That's why we call it the present."
The present.
Isn't that cool? I thought that was a cool one.
I like that one.
"I succeed by saying what everyone else is thinking."
Yes. She said that in her interview yesterday. She said, "I'm very shy personally when you interview me." She goes, "But on stage, I take on a new persona and I say everything that everyone else is thinking and doesn't want to say, but I just say it."
She made her way by doing that, and
yeah,
and somebody needed to say everything that no one else would say.
Well, she was like the shock radio of Howard Stern back in the day in the 60s. I mean, that's
totally
what she was known for. It was like, oh my God, how do you speak that way? It's like, why? Because I'm a woman. I can't say what's
exactly
on my mind.
Exactly.
So.
Now, and speaking of because I'm a woman, she's got some really funny things in here. Let me find one I just read a minute ago. It says, "A man can sleep around, no questions asked, but if a woman makes 19 or 20 mistakes, she's called a tramp." That is so appropriately Joan. But I thought that was really funny. And then she's got some other funny ones that are, people say that money is not the key to happiness, but I always figured if you have enough of it, you can have a key made. The key to happiness. Cute.
I like that. Yep.
She says, as far as working out and keeping her body as fit as her mind, she says a few things. "The first time I see a jogger smile, I'll consider it."
That's very true. You know, there's on my way to work, I see this one guy jog every morning, and I swear to God, the guy looks like he's going to keel over. The expression on his face is like, "Why am I doing this? Why am I doing this?" And I'm like, "Wow, dude, just stop running."
Right.
No one's chasing you.
Listen to this. This is one of my personal favorites.
Okay.
"If God wanted us to bend over, he'd throw diamonds on the floor."
Okay.
Okay. "I have flabby thighs, but fortunately my stomach covers them." She says, "It's been so long since I've had sex, I forgot who ties up who." "Thank God we're living in a country where the sky's the limit. The stores are open late and you can shop in bed thanks to television."
Wow.
"I think anyone who's perfectly happy isn't particularly funny."
Okay.
That's interesting. "My husband wanted to be cremated. I told him I'd scatter his ashes at Neiman Marcus. That way I'd visit him every day." Cute.
I
wish I had a twin so I could know what I look like without plastic surgery.
Let me tell you real quick. Watching her transformation last night, like, you know, on 2020, I mean, she had a lot of work done. I mean, she looked like Michael Jackson, basically.
Oh, totally.
I mean,
totally.
When you see her, because she's been in the business 30, 40 years, and to see how much she's twisted her face. Some people said that she used to look like the Joker from Batman at the end.
Funny.
You know?
She says here that she has had so much plastic surgery that when she dies, they're going to donate her face to Tupperware.
I could see that. Let me just tell you, she did not look like she was 81 at all.
She looked great.
You know, at all.
I enjoy life when things are happening. I don't care if it's a good thing or a bad thing. It means that I'm alive.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Yep. Well, she said in the interview last night that she said she, what do you want on your tombstone? She said that I had a good time.
Yeah.
You know, so she's, and it's really interesting because watching that bio of her last night, she had her ups and downs. She really, really struggled
suicide right in the middle of her career.
Well, I was going to say she really struggled in the very beginning just to get known, and then she got known, and then she fell off the entertainment world, couldn't get a job, and then she came back with a talk show, started up again, then she fell back down again. So she had her ups and downs, but she was very resilient to keep moving forward.
Let me tell you who they are pairing her with as far as other great comedians that said positive jokes. George Carlin, Groucho Marx, Lucille Ball, W.C. Fields, Rodney Dangerfield, and Bill Cosby.
Wow.
I would imagine she would be really proud to be listed amongst those because they were some of the greats. So bless Joan and her family, and thank you for all those great years you've given to us. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come up next, we have Lisa Hurt as our guest today with an amazing story. You will not want to miss this one.
I'm living here in a state of abundance. I'm counting blessings that I never saw before. Because I'm the ruler of this kingdom I call me.
Positive affirmations wrapped in pop rock songs.
Give me that best case scenario.
It's motivational musician Saint Tone. Check out his latest live show, The Rise Up Experience.
I'm a man for money.
At www.sainttone.com.
Mama said we can always hug it out.
Pick up his latest CD, Outside the Box, available on iTunes. For music with a positive message, check out sainttone.com.
And we are here with Miss Lisa Hurt. Lisa, I'm so happy to have you on our show today. Been talking about a little bit about your story, and we'd like to welcome you and have you tell our listeners in your own words what your life has been like over the last few years. Hi.
Hi there. I'm so happy to be on the show. Thank you for inviting me.
Welcome, welcome. So you had a really unique experience, but I'd kind of like to tell you to tell the listeners a little bit about you, what you were doing prior to that, maybe where you were living, what you did for a living, that type of thing, and then how your life has changed since then.
Okay, sure. I was living in southern Missouri, near Springfield, Missouri at the time. I owned two very successful real estate offices. They were Coldwell Banker offices in two little towns in between Springfield and Joplin. I would say that I was living everybody's so-called dream. I had the house with the five-car garage and the guest house and the pool and 80 acres and you name it.
That's
you know,
my dream.
All these things that, yeah. So, you know, I was living what people looked at from the outside as a dream, but inside I wasn't living that dream because I was in the middle of a divorce, and me and my ex-husband are good friends now, but we weren't meant to be together from that point on, and it mm-hmm. was just kind of a rough time in my life.
Right.
And I realized at that time that money meant absolutely nothing. That buying one more car or a new boat or an RV or whatever it might be, none of that made me happy for more than 5 to 10 minutes. And so my life was going on. We were in the middle of a divorce, and our friends that we used to travel a lot with, we used to travel all over the place with them, got us to get together for a kind of a last hurrah type thing, hoping to maybe get us back together.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the Lake of the Ozarks in Missouri for a weekend. And it has a lot of different stories to it. As far as the first one would be, I want to tell everyone out there, keep your insurance updated. I realize Obamacare probably is going to help out on some of this stuff, but my soon-to-be ex-husband and I were just talking to the insurance guy that Thursday. He needed us to fill out some forms because we were separating our insurance because of the divorce. So we had zero insurance, and my stupid thing that I said to him was, you know, nobody's sick. Let's just get this weekend over with. We'll do it on Monday. Well, Monday never came for me. Sunday, a lot of things happened.
Oh, my. That's a really good little eye-opener all by itself.
Yeah.
Yes. So on Sunday, June 19th of 2005, we were on the Lake of the Ozarks in our boat. Me and my soon-to-be ex-husband were fighting, which was not an unusual thing. And because of that, a friend of ours was driving the boat. It was nighttime. We had had dinner at a little place on the lake, and we pulled the boat out, and we're trying to get our bearings of, you know, which way our hotel was, because at the Lake of the Ozarks, they have a lot of resorts that line the lake.
Okay.
And we just needed to see the lights of the one we were going to. And as we stopped for just a moment, a 19-year-old boy in a 36-foot Sierra boat ran over the top of us.
Oh my God.
So out of nowhere, you didn't even see him. So it was just like no. Hitting a car, like you're just going, trying to get back, and a boat ran right over.
Yes. Exactly. And the funny thing was is my friend that was in the boat, I don't remember a lot of what went on in the boat, but my story does get more exciting. But she did, right before this happened, she said, I looked her straight in the eyes, and I said, don't you let me forget I'm getting a divorce. And I lost a year and a half of my life. I don't remember. So that was just a heads up right before things
wow.
crashed.
Don't let me forget. Oh, my.
Wow. Okay.
That's pretty wild.
So you're yeah. having a slight argument. You're trying to get back home. You're in the middle of this lake. I'm assuming it's dusk mm-hmm. out. Is it dark? Is it dusk?
Yeah. No, it's dark. But we have our lights on and everything. This boy I don't really know why he ran over us. He just wasn't paying attention. There's something higher in me that tells me he was on a cell phone. But mm-hmm. however mm-hmm. happened, he ran over the top of us, just flat over the top as he was going really fast.
And did everybody on the boat get hurt? Or was it just you?
I was the only critical one. My friend's husband had his face chopped up by the engine, but he lived. Oh, and that would be a horrible thing, you know, to have have those. He's had to have lots of plastic surgeries and new teeth put in, things like that. So he did get hurt. I'm not going to say he didn't. But my husband and friend at the time, neither one of them got physically hurt. So they were both there trying to take care of us.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness, yeah. Or there'd been all four of you in trouble.
Yeah, and as they would try to take care of him, I would slide back into the water, and they'd get me back up, but they had no pulse on me. I had died, and it took 28 minutes from the time of the wreck to getting the boy to come back to put us all on his boat, get us to where the ambulance met us, and them to restart me, I guess you could say. And all of that has been told to me. I don't remember any of that particular part. What I remember very well is there were two angelic beings of light that came and lifted me out of the water. And when I say angelic beings, I know they were angels, and they didn't have wings. They were dressed in robes like you would imagine Jesus or anyone from that era mm-hmm. wearing, and long hair, Mediterranean skin, and blue eyes. And they took me straight to the light. There was no tunnel. I was in a light, and that light was love. That light was the most wonderful feeling I've ever had in my life, and I truly believe that light was, in fact, God. Totally. So I was there in the presence of God. I had no stress, there was no memory of fighting with my ex-husband. There was no memory of anything evil. What I took with me was all the love there was in the world, and it expanded 25 million times.
So you were clinically dead when they brought you to shore.
Yes.
And so
I was.
Like, they called it and the whole shebang? I mean, you were like gone?
They knew that I was clinically dead, but they, you know, they jumped me to get me back, but they knew. My friend who was on the boat with me was an RN.
Yeah.
And she couldn't get a pulse on me. She couldn't, you know, my husband knew there was no pulse. They kept giving me CPR, and it's probably why my brain turned out a little bit better than, even though they weren't getting a pulse at all, they kept doing it.
Right, right.
And okay. So, yeah, I was gone. I've actually been on the show, the Biography Channel's I Survived Beyond and Back, in 2011. I was on one of the episodes on that channel because of the time of death being so long. And yet,
that's what's amazing to me is the 28 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, if you get knocked unconscious, if you stop breathing for 4 or 5 minutes.
Three.
Yeah, you're usually done.
Yeah, and so they... And even I had a friend that was a doctor at the time. She came to see me, and my mother asked her, how's Lisa doing? Because I remained in a coma for 28 days. However, the coma was only for about a week of actual coma. The rest was medically induced coma because they needed to keep me still and drain my lungs of all the water from drowning and let my brain unswell because it had been hit by shrapnel from the boat. And
So it was drowning, basically, is what you had experienced, which had taken you out for that time.
Yes, the drowning did. And, of course, the brain injury didn't help anything either.
Right.
But from what it looked like on my brain scans and everything else, my friend, the doctor, didn't have much hope for me. And she just told me, Lisa looks very peaceful. Or she told my mother that. And she went right out of the room. She said, I had to leave the hospital. I couldn't lie to your mother. I didn't want to have to tell her what I saw.
Right.
And, you know, so it was quite a ride, and they kept saying, okay, well, she's, you know, hanging in here, but anytime she'll get pneumonia, and that'll take her out, most likely. And that didn't happen. I never got pneumonia. Most people do during this. The other thing is they said that if I did, once I didn't get pneumonia, I was probably going to be, by my brain scans, paralyzed on the left side. I'm not. And what basically the doctors told my family was that they can take a heart out, redo it, and put it back. But the brain, they know about 10% of the brain, and they were years behind in understanding the brain.
Right, right, right.
And I feel that that's, you know, a big part of a lot of things. I think, you know, we don't use all of our brain because we don't know how to tap into it.
We don't understand it all, right. So how long...
And of course,
how long were you out then, Lisa? How long were you in a coma?
28 days.
I was 28. The number 28 is specific for me. It was 28 days in a coma.
It was 28 minutes, and then it was 28 days. I thought I heard it wrong.
Okay. Yeah, and then I was born on August 28th, so my birthday's in a couple days, too.
Oh, my.
And so 28 obviously is an important number for me.
Okay, so you're under for 28 days. And uh-huh. You have these beautiful angels come and pick you up out of the water, and there your journey mm-hmm. begins. Did it feel mm-hmm. like 28 days on the journey that you were on? Did it feel like you were gone that long?
No, and that's the thing. Even I could have been there the 28 minutes that I was actually out and legally dead. I could have been there the 28 days that I was in a coma. I could have been there for 1 second, or I could have been there for 20 years. There is no time. So there's mm-hmm. no way to gauge
right.
where I came
how
back.
Long, yeah.
Right, so you're just there, and you're just, absorbing. I mean, obviously, you're in a peaceful place, you're in a very loving place, and so
yes.
there is no concern of time or stress like you had said earlier, so it's you're just being,
mm-hmm.
you're just there. Yes, got it.
Yeah, Exactly. And I've never felt anything that felt more at home. I didn't want to come back to Earth. And the physical me that has two daughters would have wanted, and at the time they were teenagers, would have wanted to get back to them as soon as I could. But all I could think of is, I like it here. I want to stay.
Yeah.
And so many say that. So many people say that, that they're torn. They're like, I don't want to leave here. This is like the best place I've ever been, period.
Yeah.
I'll wait for you guys to show up, you know. It's like, you don't want to leave it. I got it.
No, you don't. I mean, it was all full of light. And the colors, if anyone that's listening that's looked at a large apophyllite crystal, the colors in that, I have one in my house with the light shining on it. That would be the colors that I experienced in the heavenly realm in the light. And it was the most beautiful feeling. And these angelic beings standing by me were not the voices that I heard talking to me. And I did hear voices, and it was not as if we're talking right now. I'm using my mouth and you're hearing my voice. Mm-hmm. This was all telepathy. I was like in the center of what seemed like a coliseum, make it a football field or a Roman coliseum from way back.
Mm-hmm.
But all I saw was lights all around. Those were energies of people that I've known and people I haven't known that were there just holding the space for me. And I felt the energies of all the ascended masters along with the energies of all, like my grandmother who had passed and my biological mother who had passed and my biological grandmother that had passed. I felt the energies of them, but I did not see them as people. But I did have a group consciousness telling me that, Lisa, you have to go back. And they said that the reason was I had to tell the world there's nothing to fear in life or in death.
Ah, okay.
So you had a mission, basically, and you had an assignment that you needed to fulfill for you to go back to.
Yes.
Got you. And did you accept that mission? Do you remember accepting it like, okay, I'll go back, or was there hesitation there? Was it like, I really don't want to take that. Give it to someone else.
it was more like, okay, fine, I'll go, but I'm not really wanting to.
Okay, I didn't know if you got the chance to argue with angels. That's what I was curious of.
Exactly. Yeah, no, not going to argue. Had to go. And so I came back, and the only reference point, and like I said, I couldn't tell you if I was there the entire coma. I couldn't tell you if I was there just the time that I was dead. I couldn't tell you, you know, when and how I was on that other side. But what I can say is that I remember hitting my body and feeling like I was stuck in a casket. And that'd be the best way to put it. I was alive in a casket, and I wanted out. So my spirit remembers hitting my body, coming back.
Oh, wow.
And like, oh. It was like, oh, here's this body again. Don't know. But the funny part was that I did all these weird things when I was in the coma after it was medically induced. For instance, I pulled my trach out one time for a long period of time. I pulled my catheter out. I was able to contort myself, and you guys met me. I'm not a small person, and I'm definitely not an acrobat, but they had me, you know, like, braced down because I kept doing crazy stuff, and I was able to flip myself over the side of the bed and just be standing there on the side of the bed with those things still on me. And
correct?
My ex-husband would come in and find me like that, you know, and he stayed with me, and he, like I said, he and I are friends now, and there's no animosity whatsoever. We're both good grandparents to our grandkids, and, you know, the whole thing.
Right.
But he took care of me, basically, when I was getting well. But the healing for me came very quickly, and once I woke up from the coma, they transferred me from Columbia, Missouri, where they'd flown me. That's where the teaching hospital is in Missouri, back to Springfield area where I was at. And they took me to a rehab center. Well, I already knew that I didn't belong at the rehab center. I was telling them where I lived. The people in the ambulance had to knock me out again because I said, no, I know we're not going the right way to my house, and a bunch of things like that. I was kind of ornery.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you knew where I needed to be, and that wasn't the place.
Yeah. So they get me in rehab, and the rehab people tell me I'll be there for 90 days, and I'm like, oh, I don't think so. And I guess this is all ego at this point in me. I'm mad I'm back. I'm not like these people here. They'd say, well, Lisa, you've had a traumatic brain injury. And I said, no, I drowned. I'm not like these people here.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took me a few days, but within 9 days they released me because I was performing at such a high way of doing that. You know, they started out with us, like, playing with Play-Doh and things like that, and I was getting mad. I was like, I did this when I was a child. Why am I doing this right now?
Yeah.
But it's because the average brain injury and the people who had brain injuries that looked very much like mine, there was a lot of them in this place that would come in and reintroduce themselves every 5 minutes. There was one boy that did that. He didn't remember. He just met me.
Another
one that was in a wheelchair sucking on a towel because he didn't have any functions of anything. There was another one that had a football helmet on because he hit his head on the wall all the time. And, I mean, there was very, very, very bad
significant
cases of brain injury.
Significant, yeah. Yeah, and I can imagine.
These people weren't going to come back from.
I can imagine, I mean, that probably inspired you to get out of there a whole lot quicker.
It did. And me telling them I'm not like them, all the occupational therapists, speech therapists, physical therapists, I did need physical therapy because everything was sideways to me for a while. So they did have to get my balance had to come back. But, you know, to speak, I was speaking clearly. I helped one of the orderlies buy his first home while I was in lockdown, because for the first 3 days they had me on, watch you, I guess, and I was doped up pretty good. I helped him figure out how to buy his first home with no money down. This is before the crash of everything.
Right. and here's you with your brain injury.
She's got a brain injury and she's selling houses. I love it.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm telling him how he needs to do this, and because that part of my brain, there was nothing about real estate that really got turned down. It was there. It was easy to come. But I realized it wasn't very long before I didn't know people I had met within the year and a half prior to this. It was just really weird. I didn't remember things that I'd done. But the hospital stay was really important for me because I asked God. I said, okay, God. I said, why me? Why am I okay when I see these people like this? Why am I okay? I know I've had my share of sins. I know that I couldn't have been any better or worse than these people. Why am I okay?
Right. Why'd you save me?
Yeah. And I got, you need to tell the world your story. So I went to work writing my story. I didn't do a life review on the other side. I ended up writing a book called Divinely Blessed, which you can find on Amazon or on a website that I have called Simply Spiritual Solutions. And it is more about my life before the accident and going back to my childhood and up until this time, everything I considered a sin in my life that I had performed. I wanted people to know, guess what, I went to the light anyway.
Right.
Not that it's right to do those things or any of the stuff that worried me that maybe that there was a place called hell no longer worried me. And I do believe in there is good and there is evil. I don't believe that there's a destination called hell. I think evil walks this earth.
Lisa, do you practice a certain religion?
Not anymore. I was raised Catholic, very, very much Catholic. My birth family was Catholic. I was adopted into Catholic charities, and then, of course, I was baptized Catholic twice. Another one oddity is that when I was born in 1967, I'm telling my age since my birthday is in a couple of days. Anyhow,
you're still a baby, girlfriend. You're still a baby.
I was born with a hole in my heart, and I weighed 3 pounds, 2 ounces. Wow. And in 1967, those babies didn't live. So I was baptized and given my last rites as soon as I was born. So
how many times are you going to do this in your lifetime?
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking I've got the hint. I'm going to try to stay good now.
Well, you're obviously strong, and you're obviously a fighter, and you've obviously been put on this planet to carry out a duty, because they're not taking you anytime soon. Not since birth. Not since that big incident that you had. So I think it's pretty obvious that you've got a mission here, girlfriend.
I was curious real quick, when you did come back and you came back to your body, and I have heard that before, that, you know, it's almost like when you're dreaming and then you wake up because you feel like you've been thrown back into your body. Did you quickly open your eyes and look around? Were you able to speak? Do you remember who you saw? Did you remember going, oh, okay, I'm back here again? Was it one of those, or was it more like Like, were you familiar with where you were and what was happening?
I was still drugged up, so all I knew that is my spirit was in my body, so I couldn't see anybody. My spirit wanted back out. I think that's why I was doing the weird contortionist moves and pulling out my trach and doing all these things. I think my spirit was trying to get back, like, I've changed my mind. I want to go back.
You got to go now.
I was told that had I been, you know, conscious, one of the other things they told me was my life was going to get hard, a lot harder than it had been, and I was not allowed to take my own life. I wouldn't come to the same place. However, I don't believe in hell, and I don't believe they were talking about a place called hell if I'd taken my own life. I do believe that it wouldn't have been what I call the penthouse, where I was at.
Right.
I think that there's somewhere between the lobby and the penthouse you end up.
Yeah. Yep. Totally with you there.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Gotcha.
And so, so there's definitely different levels. And I never studied the Mormon culture or anything, but I had some ladies come by my house one day, and they talk about levels of heaven. I said, well, that's the first time I've heard it. And I'm not saying I'm believing everything about your religion. I think, you know, anything anybody believes, as long as it's about a higher power, I think it's great. And
right.
I don't judge any religions whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a little bit of all of them that are right, a little bit of all of them that are man-made and wrong, and a whole lot that we need to do ourselves to show the planet that we need to stop fighting over all this stuff. I mean, there's so many people like me that keep having these incidents, and they keep coming back saying, you know, God is love. That is what God is. God's not a judgment person. He's not a man with a cane that hits you in the head and said, okay, you're going to hell, or you're going to heaven, or whatever people imagine. God is love.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because we last week in our show, we interviewed a lady named Marilyn Harper, who's also from Springfield, Missouri area, interestingly enough.
Yes.
And she's doing a retreat in Mount Shasta, North Sacramento area in California. But the reason I'm bringing that up is because she's bringing people together from all over the world, speakers from Africa and Australia and all over. And she said that she was called to do this retreat there to gather the world, because the whole message is one of unity and love, and that the big message that she had gotten when she had visited Mount Shasta in the past was that she needed to bring the world together to focus on love.
Yes, I think the Beatles had it right a long time ago when they sang the song, "All You Need Is Love."
Yeah.
Well, listen, the messages have been coming through authors and artists and musicians for years. And it's so simple that some people just seem to forget it. And I think we are going through a shift again right now. A lot of us are feeling that we're going through a shift again. And it's an awakening for a lot of us to realize, hey, things are going to change. They have to change, because we can't keep going down the road that we've been going.
Well, and
it's
helping
people like you,
right,
that we bring on our show, because these are people that we'd like to spotlight, because you're here for a purpose. And I
yes.
know that you're selling homes is one thing, but I think it's a little deeper than that.
Yeah, that I lost the passion of the real estate, you know, owning the real estate offices and stuff. I made sure I could still run them for the next 2 years after this happened in 2005. Well, actually, it was 3 years. I sold them in 2008 and actually sold real estate offices in 2008, which is just a miracle in itself, because, you know, nobody was wanting to buy a real estate office in 2008, but I had that
right.
kind of quality people working for me and a business that was very successful. And I sold that, and then in 2009 I got married and moved to California, and that's how I got out here. And it's been, you know, I knew that I needed to be on a bigger open place, closer to the water, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel very comfortable here in California. I always want to get closer to the water. I keep telling myself, I've got to get closer to the water. But Missouri is a wonderful place, don't get me wrong. I lived a lot of happy years there, and you can live there very, very, not as nearly expensive as it is out here.
Right.
And meet a lot of people, and I have a lot of friends there that, you know, will be lifetime friends. But not all of them understood what I was trying to tell them when, you know, all this stuff happened. I think they thought probably Lisa had been a little bit more brain damaged than people realized.
Yeah, she got hit a little harder in the head than we thought.
Yeah, she's still really sharp with how to sell a house, but I don't know that the story she's talking about.
California is very much known for having a really high spiritual content of people. you know, with a really high level of spirituality. So it's not a surprise that you were drawn to come here, you know, and
no,
being
not
close
right.
to the water.
I was born in Stockton as well.
Oh, well, there
so
you
I
go.
Was actually born in California and yeah. ended up Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, and then back out here again.
And being attracted to the water, there's definitely always been a spiritual connection to the water for me. I was raised on the water in Florida on the Gulf of Mexico. And when we decided mm-hmm. to move out here 3 years ago, my criteria was I couldn't be very far from the water. I have to be
yeah,
close to
yeah,
the water.
Exactly.
So,
and here, you know, a lot of people ask me, are you afraid of the water after this happened? I'm like, no, that's what's so funny. And my father, in the early 70s and into the early 80s, was the owner of, or one of the owners of Comanche Lake in Northern California that's up past Stockton, Sacramento, up in Calaveras County.
Mm-hmm.
So I was around water all of my life. And, you know, for it to almost have taken my life, people are just like, I don't understand. Are you scared of boats? Nope. I'm not scared of boats. I'm not scared of water. It's just that thing happened to me.
Right.
And, it was very peaceful. Some of the things that I did learn was that even no matter how mangled you are in a wreck, there's something that comes. And for anyone that's lost someone in a wreck, I hope that this makes them feel better. Would be that I didn't feel anything. My finger was ripped off. My head was cut open. I was mangled pretty good. And I felt none of it. It was as if when the angels arrived, I was just covered from any of that. I didn't feel it. And I've had an uncle that died in a car accident. And I always thought, oh, gosh, I'm sure that was horrible and painful and this and that. It's so instantaneous that it's just like we're covered and we're gone.
It just wipes, erases the tragedy and moves you right into the light and the other side and the next realm of your life.
Yeah, and then, of course, pops me back out so that I can talk about how we have to love each other more and help each other more and do what's right in the world. And I've been working on a book, and I call it downloading. I've downloaded it since the accident, and it's all about the other side. And I'm hoping that this is the year that I get it put together and put out, because it's done now. It's just a matter of getting the right right work and getting everything to roll the right way.
Right.
And so real estate investing is what I do now. I'm definitely more of a real estate investor. In that sense, it gives me a lot more freedom to do the things that I want to do. And I really want to be able to sell some of the investment properties and things so that I can help others with whatever they need, be it charity things or to talk to people. It's not as much about the money as it is about the word.
Right.
That needs to be shared, that
we
need the world to know.
And, you know, I have to say that since we started this show a year ago and we've had, you know, people on every single week, it's really cool. I was saying to Tony, we've done 48 shows officially, and everybody has been on such a great track to help change and shift the world to be a more loving and better place. And it's so refreshing jumping into humanitarian radio for one reason and realizing this whole outside community that is here to wake everybody up. I think it's really, really cool. We started the show because I was getting really insulted after moving into Hollywood, and all these actors continually get bashed and bashed and bashed for all the, you know, this one cheated on that one and all this smut stuff and all these magazines. But then
They're
all doing these really awesome things and donating millions and millions and millions of dollars to all these humanitarian causes, and nobody ever talks about that kind of thing. And so
that's very true. They talk about 10 pounds that some girl gained
that's
on TV, and they make them at weight, you know, they have to keep a weight that nobody can hold.
Right.
Yeah, so, it's horrible.
So that was my inspiration to even get the show started was, you know, there's a lot of people doing really great things out there, and nobody talks about that. Where's the good news channel, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, there needs to be good news, because, you know, there's so much negativity. You turn on the news. I don't even watch the news, the world news. My husband, he likes to watch it, so he can fill me in if there's something really disastrous going on. But otherwise, I just don't want to know.
Honestly,
I want to know is how we can fix it.
Tony,
that's exactly
that all the time.
That is exactly where I'm coming from. I heard that from Wayne Dyer had talked about how the news sensationalizes things. And if you actually watch it, you know, a tree fell down and hit a house in Oklahoma. And I'm living in California. And not that I don't want to feel bad for it, but, you know, how does that affect me currently? And people say, well, I want to be informed. It's good to be informed. I'm like, but you could be informed about good things just as much as you could be informed about bad things. You don't need to know about a blizzard in Alaska if it's you're living in Hawaii. I mean, it's not really affecting you right now. And there's some really good stories going on in Hawaii, just like there's some great stories going on in Alaska. So I'm with you 1,000%. I stopped watching the news probably, I'd say, almost 10 years ago. And people go, well, did you hear about that girl who got hit? Did you hear about that? I go, no. And the big stories you'll know about because everyone else is talking about it. And then you get filled in. But other than that, I don't need to know the day-to-day fires, murders, accidents. It just it doesn't serve me. So,
no, it doesn't. And I think back, you know, because we all know where we were on September 11th when that happened. I mean, I was getting ready for work, and I was getting audited by the Real Estate Commission in Missouri that day.
Oh, awesome. And,
it was lucky for me that happened because he couldn't concentrate on my one office, and then he did the second day. But bottom line, it's just a stressful thing to go through. But what I remember the most is everybody, you know, that came together, everybody across the world, you know, and in our country, giving and helping. And you know, when we've had the hurricanes, we see the people giving and helping. That's the stuff that needs to be reported on.
Exactly.
Bad things don't have to happen. They shouldn't have to happen for us to come together like that. We need to come together like that every day.
Yeah, as human beings, good human beings.
So tell us a little bit more about this website that you have. So you have a book that you just written, and it's going to come out this year. That's my prediction for you, by the way.
Okay, great. It.
Yeah. I'm just putting it out
just
there.
Just want to slip that in for you that the energy is good and correct for it to be released this year.
Okay.
I'm really feeling that for you. So it's
well,
the right
you.
Time.
I need that, and I need to just get it out there because it's very positive. There aren't a lot of things for us to fear in life, and we are wonderful, wonderful beings that can live a life in the light. But the closer and the more we bring the darkness up to us, just like the news, the bad news, that's darkness. That's a horrible things that happen. If we live in that muck all the time, how are we ever going to get out of the mud and get into the sun, I guess you could say?
Yeah.
You can't see it. You're stuck in the mud.
No. Exactly. And I think there's a lot of us on this planet right now that feel like that's exactly where we're at, stuck in the mud.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about your website and what you're doing or how that came about. Because you said you had gotten married and moved here to California.
Yeah, my website came about because I did write my first book in 2008, and it's called Divinely Blessed, and it is the story of my life and a bit about what it was like on the other side. It was not like a nationwide bestseller. I published it myself, and I have had a lot of great comments made on it, and I have helped people, and I know that if a book helps just one person, it was worth writing. So
exactly.
I'm very blessed to have written it, and I will never be able to run for president in this particular world because I've told everything I ever did that was bad. But anyway, I'm okay with that. My website is simply Spiritual Solutions or DrLisaHurt.com, and that's my little Maltese just barking to say hello. I got a PhD in holistic life counseling after my accident because I was trying to get to a place that was different than real estate. And so that's how I became a PhD, and I'm very metaphysical as far as that goes. So
now you got your PhD through, I know you did something with Chopra. Is that who you did that through?
No, actually, I'm a Vedic master with the Chopra Center as well. This has been a time of learning for me, a lot of learning, and I knew my spirit and my my mind and my spirit were in the right spot, but my body started falling apart. You know, I had all these illnesses and things that were coming on my body, and so I went to the Chopra Center and started practicing Ayurveda, yoga, and meditation, and that... through that, I ended up getting a certificate as a Vedic master so I can help other people do the same type of work. But my PhD actually came from the University of Sedona, and it is a metaphysical PhD.
Wonderful. Wonderful. How long did it take for you to get that? How long of a study?
It was a kind of do it at your own pace type of thing, but I think it took me between 2009 and 2011, so probably 2 years.
Okay.
And I could have done it probably faster or slower.
I
decided, because I kept reading things. I read about different religions. I read about all these different things, and Spirit kept telling me, read about spirituality, and metaphysics. And so then I've read all these books. So I thought, okay, let's go ahead and study this stuff. You keep buying books. Why not just get a PhD in this? So that's how that worked.
Wow. So obviously now, you were saying earlier, and this is, I just wanted to bring this up. You were saying earlier that some of your older friends didn't quite understand your transformation. Has this transformation mm-hmm. continues? Do they still react the same way? Like, wow, now she's getting a PhD in metaphysics. She was selling houses.
She's really cuckoo.
Yeah, like it's like, you know, some people think that. They go, she was very successful, then she sold her business, and now she's playing with crystals, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think there's probably a few of them that do feel that way, but I think a lot of them have become a little bit more open to what I'm talking about. I think things have happened in their life where they've actually come to me on Facebook, for instance, and said, gee, Lisa, this happened in my life, and I totally understand where you're coming from. So I'd say it's about 50-50, you know, and the world's only going to wake up as fast as we can wake them up. And there are certain places where the religious dogma is so heavy that they're afraid to look outside the box.
Totally.
Right.
Well, Missouri, you know, Oklahoma, Arkansas are all, you know, in that, and I love the people that are all there. It has nothing to do with that. It's just they're kind of back. They're not really open to, and when I say that, I don't mean every person there, but majority aren't open to a long light.
Yeah, it's a territory, you know, it's a territorial thing where, you know,
what's your environment?
People don't learn that in certain environments, and so you're a product of what you've been taught, and there you have it.
Listen, I'm from Connecticut, and Connecticut's obviously a very, very old New England state, and
there's
a lot of old traditions there, and so there's no real new way of thinking. It just is what it is.
New thought comes from
like places like the West Coast and places that, you know, are just on more of a cutting edge, so...
So, Lisa, what's on the horizon for you? What are you looking forward to for the rest of your life?
Or at least this coming year.
Let me think. For the rest of my life, I would like to live a very peaceful life, a very productive life. I'm not a person that is good at just kind of being retired. I want to be out there. I want to help people. I want to talk and tell my story along with to come together with other people of like minds and do things to help the world.
Yay.
I think that's a great choice. And I think you're on the right path, because obviously you came back from a really cool place to do it. So obviously you better be doing it
twice.
Yes, exactly.
you left a really cool place to come back to do something. So
get on it.
Yeah, I agree. And I was told just, last weekend or weekend before last at a retreat that I was invited to, and I was a guest at this retreat, and it was really a blessing kind of given to me. But one of the first things that the lady running the retreat told me was, Lisa, you woke up, but you haven't gotten up. And so it's time for me to get up, get out of the house, get out of just my little world here in the Inland Empire, and spread the word everywhere.
That's awesome, and obviously you're taking that torch and you're running with it. I want to really mm-hmm. thank you for being part of our show and sharing your story with us. Real quick, how can people find you? What's your website?
SimplySpiritualSolutions.com or DrLisaHurt.com.
Do you have a Facebook as well?
Yes, it's Lisa Reed Hurt.
R-E-E-D?
That's R-E-E-D.
All right.
And then H-U-R-T-T.
Fabulous. Lisa, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. And we encourage our listeners to see what you're up to and follow you and keep an eye on you. And when that book comes out, grab that second one. Grab the first one while you're waiting.
And when that book comes out, we're gonna invite you back on.
Yay.
Oh, I'd love that. And I've enjoyed our time together very much. And anytime you guys are doing something and you need some help, just let me know.
We sure will. Thanks again. So every week we'd like to send a song out to our guests. This week is no different. The song I chose is Shine My Light. It is a song I wrote a couple of years back off the World Radio CD. And I really think that Lisa is here for a reason. And she came back from the other side to help humanity out. So this is Shine My Light by Saint Tone.
I'm here shining my light for the first time in years. Nobody's on the phone and you're sitting home alone. There's what to do. Outside and you feel you've been denied. So what to do? Relax your mind. Breathe in as your body unwinds. So I'll be there. In the song, I'm here shining my light for the first time in years, babe. I'm here shining my light. I'm here shining my light for the first time in years, babe. Shining my light, first time in years, first time in years. Flowers in your hair, living life without a care, you seek the truth. Loving every day, finding sunlight through the rain, you trust in you. I'll be there to help you follow through. Yes, I'll be there when darkness blinds the truth. Yes, I'll be there to help you realize we've all got a light to shine. So shine. First time in years, babe. I'm here shining my light. I'm here shining my light. First time in years. The first time in years.
So once again, that was Shine My Light from Saint Tone. You could find that song at www.sainttone.com. That's S-A-I-N-T-2-N-E.com. It is off the World Radio CD. It was the first track. And while you're there, make sure to check out the Facebook page. Check out our Facebook page also on Humanitarian Radio.
And while you're there, why don't you tell us about things that you're doing in your community or things that you know about or people who need assistance or guidance through people that have been on our show. We'd like you to use our show as a method to propel things that are going on in your world, help the people that you know need help in your communities. Humanitarian Radio was started so that we could be of assistance and guidance and connect the people together that need connecting in order to facilitate really cool things for our fellow human beings.
It's almost like we're a voice for your neighbor next door who's doing some great things or
Absolutely.
Some charitable events. I tell people often, you don't need to be a high-end celebrity doing a huge charity event. You could be something small that's just helping out a neighbor who might have... They've broken a leg and is out of work. Exactly, and need some help. So we're always looking for people that are doing great things within their community, big or small. It doesn't matter as far as size. We just want to help spread the word and get people to recognize it.
So contact us either through our Facebook, which a lot of people have reached out to us, and a lot of guests on our show, just so you know, have come to us through Humanitarian Radio Facebook. They've found us. They have something to tell us about, and we feature them on the show. So feel free to do the same and let us know about great things going on.
And I also just want to mention that Mike Precise is still running his campaign. Mike and his brother, his twin brother, both have an eye disease that they are trying to cure, and we are trying to help him get to that goal of $25,000. We're getting closer and closer with your donations, and every week we ask, but every week we get closer, so we appreciate everyone for what they've been doing for us.
We are actually halfway to the total for the first surgery for Mike for the first eye. And what the first surgery will do will stop the disease from growing. So literally, the first surgery for each of these guys is like $4,500 for each eye. But that stops the disease. No longer lets it ruin their eyesight. If we can get both guys to that point, for starters, that is a beautiful thing. Because
that
stops the blindness. Then after that, the next three surgeries that they each get are to correct things like myopia and astigmatisms and the other things that have come along with this disease. And FYI, these guys are 28 years old and they only contracted this 3 years ago. So imagine living a normal everyday life and all of a sudden you can't see right. It really rocks me in that I can't even imagine having that shift in my life. So suddenly like that. So, and this is why we jumped on board and said, hey, let us let everybody know what's going on with you guys and see if we can help. And our listeners have been phenomenal helping us with $5 donations up to $1,000 donations. And we just got to say that doing something really great for another human being feels really good. Jump on board with us and help these guys out.
And you know, I got to say that I didn't realize this, but my brother had that same disease.
And your cousin. Yeah.
And my cousin. I just got a text from him because he had heard us on the radio. And he said, you know, I have that same type of disease, but he goes, mine went into remission.
Keratoconus.
Keratoconus, yeah. And from what I understand, what happens is your eye almost becomes like a football shape. And that's why you start getting that kaleidoscope vision.
Right. Exactly.
And he says that it was hard for him to wear contacts. Because I remember there was a point where he had to wear one contact at a time for like 6 months and then take that one out and put another one in, so he couldn't have both in at the same time.
This series and part of the money that we're asking for to help Mike, he actually has to go through about $10,000 worth of contacts in a six-week series after the surgery to help his eyes to get back to a normal vision again, back to 20/20. And he can get back to 20/20, he and his brother both. But it's a process, and so we're asking for your help to get that first step going and let these guys get their vision back and get back as productive beings in our country.
Yep. Go to our humanitarianradio.com to check out more about Mike and how you can help out. Until next week, we hope you have a great, great week, and we'll see you then.
And remember, be a good person. Bye-bye.
Humanitarian Radio, shouting out some good news for your soul.